When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everybody and welcome to the latest Liverpool Blood Red podcast with me, Ian Doyle. And we are roadside here in Bergamo at the, I can't see what it's called, it's the, oh hang on, it's the Café de Viale. And I'm joined by two esteemed gentlemen, well, one. The gentleman is Carl Markham of the Press Association. Hello Carl.
Hello.
Sorry,
Ian.
Hi Carl.
Hi Ian, thank you very much.
And to be fair, he is a gentleman. It's Lewis Steele of the Daily Mail. Hello, Lewis.
Buongiorno, Ian.
That's very good Italian.
Grazie. Yes, that's all I know.
Right.
That's my Italian
well,
done now.
Well, obviously, we're here for the Europa League game. Liverpool are playing against Atalanta, and they are, if you haven't noticed, they're losing by 3 goals. They'll be playing a bit later on this evening. We'll quickly just deal with the game itself. Start with you, Carl. What do you think's going to happen, and how do you think Liverpool should play it?
What's going to happen? Well, I don't know. I mean, Klopp, last night at the press conference, Klopp seemed to think that people's opinion had changed massively in a week. He said that, you know, last Thursday everyone thought they were out, and having spoken to some people during the week, he now thought it wasn't all done and dusted. But I don't know if that's just...
Yeah, I think it's gone from 100% of people thinking they're out to 99.9%.
Yeah. Yeah. So... it's one of those games where you're expecting, you know, miracles again, and I'm not saying this side or this club hasn't done it in the past, but this side hasn't really gone that far, that deep into competitions and turned it around. Obviously everyone referenced Barcelona yesterday in Friday's pieces after the press conference. It's going to take something of that proportion, I think, to do it. And not beyond the realms of possibility, but they've got to not concede against, you know, Atalanta, and judging by their performance on Thursday last week, that looks like it might be a difficult task, I think, here.
But Lewis, Liverpool have earned 27 points from losing positions in the Premier League this season, which makes up, what is it, it's more than a third of the total, isn't it? So it shows they've got a bit of fighting spirit there, but as Carl said, 3-0, let's be honest, most of us are pretty sure they're not going to do it. But if they are going to do it, what are they going to have to do? Apart from obviously score four goals. 3 goals, 6 defence.
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard, because I was speaking to one of the Italian guys before the press conference, and he
did
was
you say buongiorno and
no, I hadn't learned them words by that point. And he was saying that the atmosphere, even though it's a small stadium, is quite like a cauldron. Obviously, he's all the time, so he would probably know better. And the difference from that Barcelona one is obviously they don't have the Anfield crowd behind them. But when you flip that, Atalanta aren't Barcelona. They're obviously no mugs, as we saw last week. But if this was just a one-off game instead of group stage and people predicted a 3-0 Liverpool win, I don't think people would be saying, oh, that's a ridiculous prediction. But with the fact that Atalanta have that in the bag, and as I said, they're no mugs, I think they can easily just set up to frustrate Liverpool, keep it tight for the first half an hour, and then they should be fine. But if Liverpool do get that first goal in the first 10-15 minutes, then who knows what will happen. They're definitely going to go for it. Klopp will probably put out a very strong team and they'll give it every go. But I think in the wider context, they've just got to win this game on the night, because if they go into the weekend on the back of 3 defeats, then people, the noise around them, the negative noise, will just keep on ramping up.
But we'll get on to the wider picture in a second, but just the final bit on the game itself. What do you think Klopp, in terms of personnel, what he's going to do, tactics? He said we just want to play, last night he said, just play in the Liverpool way, which suggests that he's not going to do something mad like 3-4-3 or something like that. But are you expecting it to go absolutely as full strength as possible for this one? Because it is a European quarterfinal.
I think he has to. I mean, yeah. What option does he have? He was talking a good game last night, saying we're here to win, we're not here to, you know, come and see all the tourist spots that know nothing about Bergamo. And what other options does he have apart from to go for it? It is all or nothing, but to coin the title of another club's documentary series.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got to go as strong as he can and believe that they can turn it around, because if he doesn't believe they can turn it around, then the players won't believe he can turn it around, and the fans certainly won't give him any hope. So I think he's got to go as strong as possible. And I mean, he's always said it's always the next game that's the most important. We never look ahead to the what's coming up for the weekend and in terms of team selection. So I think he's just got to send him out there. I was referencing his speech that he gave before the Barcelona game. I was looking up what some of the players had said, and Dejan, the much missed Dejan Lovren.
Yeah,
much missed Dejan Lovren.
He always stopped at the mixer.
Yeah. Always good for a quote. And he said, Klopp just said to them, go out there and show some balls against Barcelona. And that's what they did. And they've got to take the game to Atlanta and do the same
against Atlanta in the first leg. Talking about balls, the problem with Liverpool is that they couldn't really keep hold of it for too often, could they? Because of the man marking that Atlanta did in midfield. And while that's not unusual for any team to do that, Liverpool seemed to struggle a little bit with it, didn't they?
They did, and I wasn't overly surprised. This is just what you expect from an Italian team. And to be honest, I think this sort of result's been coming all season. I think Liverpool have glossed over a lot you mentioned how many times they've come back, but they've been 1-0 down in just so many games. They were always at risk of not getting that equaliser and then falling apart in the second half, which we saw.
Do you feel like the defensive midfield issue is one that's eventually come back to haunt them a little bit? Because, yeah, they had Fabinho and Henderson and Milner and Pasetic, but of course three of them have left. Pasetic has hardly played this season. They did get Endo in, but McAllister's the only one who's really been able to do it, but he's had to play all the games. Now he's tired, and Endo, when he loses a little bit of form, there's no way they can change it.
Yeah, Endo's looked a bit leggy in the last sort of
it's new to him, isn't it, playing in the Premier League?
Yeah,
isn't it? And he also had an international tournament in the middle of the season as well.
Yeah. Klopp complained that the press isn't working, because it's not working as
the Liverpool
unit.
Press, not
yeah.
us.
Yeah,
not
well, us. Yeah. Well, judging by this attitude for this trip, they won't be really working on this trip either.
I think so, but I've been doing a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, he's suggesting that the press isn't working because they're just not working as a unit, which suggests that, you would expect that it's because they're sort of physically compromised rather than sort of tactically compromised.
Yeah, he was always going to catch up with them in the end, wasn't it, the injury situation. But having said that, Lewis, Liverpool have lasted longer than Manchester City and Arsenal in Europe this season. Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, but that's only because they're in the
Thursday night football has advantages.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. No excuses.
No, I mean, I think we all expect Liverpool to just romp to the final in Dublin of this competition. It was a massive surprise.
The Dublin proprietors, and they all failed. Yeah. That was going to happen. Yeah.
And there's probably a few sighs of relief at UEFA's headquarters when Liverpool went 3-0 down, because I think they were scrambling with only 12,000 tickets on for Liverpool fans. But who knows, they might still turn it round. As we mentioned before, the documentary cameras are in. That would be a great episode, wouldn't it, if Liverpool turn it round tonight. And they've definitely got it in them, but as well as the press being off, I think that the goals have dried up as well, haven't they? Darwin seems to have lost his shooting boots. Salah's not really hit the heights that he can since his injury. Obviously Jota's been out for a while. Luis Diaz has been a bit iffy at times, inconsistent, and Cody Gakpo's not really been anywhere near his best in the last few months. So that's the main thing. They've got to put the ball away tonight, and it'd be interesting to see what that front three, or maybe he'll change formation, I doubt it, but be interesting to see who he goes with in the
Lewis,
front three.
Okay, we'll pick the team now then. It's what we tend to do on this podcast, but we'll do it very briefly. So you put in Alisson in goal.
Yeah.
Trent right back.
Yes.
Who are your centre backs? Van Dijk and I'd say Quanta.
I'd say Quanta.
I'd say.
Okay. Quanta. Left back Robertson.
Yes.
Midfield. This is the interesting one, right? Are you playing Endo and McAllister?
I think he'll maybe try and give Harvey Elliott a go, because he's got a bit more legs, hasn't he, and energy in that midfield.
Well, who's going to be playing the number six?
McAllister.
You say McAllister. I think McAllister as well. So you reckon Elliott. I also think Elliott as well. And who's the other one? I'm going to go Curtis Jones.
Yeah.
Or Sobers, like.
No, I was
Do you not think they need a bit more of a goal threat from midfield?
Curtis Jones has scored, I think, not far off Szoboszlai, and he's played a lot fewer games because he's been injured.
Yeah.
I think Szoboszlai is an interesting one because he obviously had that really good start to the season, but since then he's only shown it in glimpses, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I think when he arrived, we all thought he was going to be, the way he started was like, well, this is going to be a major signing, this guy. And then he has just tailed off. So his second half of the season has been...
Well, again, he's another one who's new to the Premier League and probably not used to the intensity.
Maybe burnt himself out.
So hang on, are you picking him or not?
I'm picking him, you're not.
Okay, yeah. And up front, I'm going to go Salah, Gakpo and Jota, with Gakpo on the left.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
So I'm also dropping Nunes. I'm going to...
Yeah, I've dropped him as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Heads also. Yeah. Sorry.
I'd go Jota through the middle and Diaz out. Well, I think Diaz is...
You wouldn't play Gakpo? He's been good when he's come on the last few years.
He has, yeah, but...
He does tend to pop up with goals... You know.
Yeah, he's a big game player.
But when they've been chasing games, he's sometimes ditched the midfielder and gone sort of 4-2-4, hasn't he? It'd be interesting.
He's not going to do that from the start.
At half time, if they've won it up, for example, they need a couple more.
Right, well, we pick the team. Jürgen will now pick completely the opposite team to that.
You're saying he doesn't listen to the podcast?
I'm saying he does listens to it intently.
They'll have it on the loudspeaker on the bus, won't they?
Yeah, and then completely says whatever they've just said,
do the opposite,
because they know nothing about football. Look at the season as a whole then. I mean, Lewis, you picked up on this or touched on it just a little bit earlier, saying about the importance of this game regards the Premier League, because they've still got six games to go. I know everybody is doom and gloom, but apart from me, actually, because I've been quite upbeat about things recently, is that they're only 2 points off the top. So it's not the end of the world that they've lost the game. You know, they're not going to win all of the games, are you?
I think the reaction to Sunday's results, both at Anfield and Arsenal's loss as well, has just been way over the top.
Says the man from the Daily Mail.
and we've contributed to that, but City have still got to go to... They've still got to play Tottenham. All three of them have got tough games, but it's definitely not out of the equation that there's another turnaround now. And obviously, Liverpool have got tough games as well. But if they win tonight, it gets that winning feeling back, and then they've got six games to sort of... If they win them all, then they've certainly got a chance of winning the league, because... City looked a bit vulnerable at times last night against Real.
They were playing against Real Madrid, though, to be
true.
Fair.
Yeah. But
how many shots did they have against Real Madrid? 26.
26. I was not that vulnerable. Plus five penalties.
Yeah.
Of which they missed two.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think
Bernardo Silva's penalty wasn't very good, was it?
It wasn't very good at all. Apparently, he'd never taken a penalty before in his career.
Ever? Oh.
The commentator.
You'd never have guessed.
Well, apparently, the commentator said he's never taken a penalty before. And then after it was saved, the commentator then added, he's done his homework on where Bernardo likes to put his penalty.
That's some insight, that is.
as I was saying, they've got to just win this game tonight, whether it's win the tie or not, to get that winning feeling back. Because if they go to Fulham on Sunday, having lost three in a row or gone winless in three, for example, then a bit of doubt creeps into the mind going to Craven Cottage, which is a tough place to go.
Yeah, it's miles away from my house. So, Carl, what are you of the opinion that it's important in that respect just to get Liverpool back, not so much on track, but more of an even keel, shall we say?
Yeah, it's all about momentum, especially towards the end of the season. It's all about momentum. And we've seen in those close title races where, you know, City had the momentum and reeled off, you know, 12, 13, whatever wins on a bounce, and Liverpool were 10 out of 12 or whatever. And it just comes down to six games, and if you can't get momentum from those six games, then you probably don't deserve to be in the title race. So it is just about getting a win, getting through if you can. Obviously, that's almost secondary now, and just generate some momentum. And I think as well, the more people look back on last weekend, the more it feels like a missed opportunity. I mean, they wouldn't, obviously they lost first they were in the early game,
yeah.
And I thought that was bad, and then that was compounded by Arsenal losing.
I think it made it even worse.
It's like, oh, that's a real missed opportunity. But
everybody knew they were going to not. These teams weren't all going to win all their games. Possibly City might now, actually, now that they're out of Europe. But if Liverpool are going to mess up, I think Crystal Palace at home probably wasn't the one that anyone would have expected. I mean, I personally would have been a bit more concerned had they created zero chances and done nothing. Because they could, I mean, the first half they were poor for about 30 to 35 minutes. But the second half, while they were never massively convincing, they still missed three really big chances.
It's those fine margins. And say, you can build on that and then generate some momentum and then just hope your luck's going to turn. And say, for the short period you're looking at now, six games is nothing. You know, this team should be able to get six games over the line with the quality they have, and it's just a question of people starting to click again and get the goals that, as Lewis said, appears to have dried up when they needed them most from the big players.
I mean, Liverpool, even when they've had a poor season on the clock, they've had a tendency to finish quite strongly. Look at last season, they finished pretty strongly. 2022, when we were going for the league, finished strongly. 2021, when everybody was injured, they still managed to put together that run at the end. You know, Alisson scoring the header.
Yeah.
2020 was probably the weakest finish, but they'd already won the league by about 25 points. And 2019, they were battling with City all the way. And 2018, slightly different, but they had got to a Champions League final. So this team, while there are a lot of new players in it, there's still an awful lot who know exactly what needs to be done to just finish it strongly.
Yeah, they definitely can, but there's still some very tricky games in those six Premier League games. The one that I'm sort of looking at is Villa away.
I reckon it might be finished by then. I've always said this. Yeah.
But on the back of that performance against Arsenal, and I've watched Villa beat City this season, they beat Arsenal as well over Christmas, and they just seem to turn up in those big games. Obviously, they didn't at all when they went to the Etihad about a month ago. They just completely rolled over. But that's
made loads of changes as well that day.
Yeah, there was Watkins was injured, Martinez was ill or something. But and then there's obviously the Merseyside derby on Wednesday, which obviously at Goodison, it'll be the penultimate Goodison derby before they move stadiums.
Or the last one, unless they get relegated.
Yeah,
well, if they get relegated.
Well, that's the thing. They're playing like a relegation team at the moment. Like that one against Chelsea on Monday was just like terrible from Everton. But it's a Merseyside derby, and as the old cliche goes, form goes out the window, so that won't be easy.
That is the great myth, by the way. Form does not go out the window for derby. It hasn't for a long time, because that's why if Liverpool don't get the results, both teams will be going into that and so with not great form, and you would think, well, it could be anything here.
Maybe
for the day.
Form only goes out the window if it's Man United.
They are an emotional games, aren't they, United? It almost like, since that 2-2 draw with United, I know some Liverpool fans were like, oh, that's it, it's finished. It's like, no, it's not. And it's kind of, well, I'm not saying it's infected some of the team or anything, but the atmosphere at Anfield hasn't been great the last two games. And I actually think it might help them that they're playing all these games away. It might help them to kind of right themselves before they then end up with the two home games that they've got. Was it Tottenham and Wolves? Yeah, because, and this is a nice segue, because they're going to be Klopp's last two games at home as Liverpool manager, unless they do something amazing tonight. And just overall, Carl, just very briefly, Jurgen Klopp, where would you rank him in the pantheon? I'll give you my answer in the pantheon, because we, as anybody who reads the Echo will know, that we've got a special Jurgen Klopp standalone edition, £4.99. You can buy it online and follow all the links
there. Yeah,
plug on our own podcast, so I think that's okay.
Do we get a free copy for coming on this podcast?
Signed copy. I'm starting to get soaked on here, so I might just need to put my coat on a little bit. So yes, I've ranked him, obviously Paisley and Shankly are the top two, not necessarily in that order, but then on the next tier down, I think Klopp is pushing alongside Kenneth Matheson Dalglish.
Yes,
so what would you say?
I would think, and it might be sacrilege, I think for what he's achieved, what he could have achieved, and what he's done generally, I would probably put him above Kenny.
Oh, so is he definite third?
I think he's worthy of third, just because of the whole.
But then you've got, you know, Dalglish had to, he was picking up after Heysel, and he had to deal with the Hillsborough disaster as well. So I think there's another element to. I know if you're talking about pure management.
But you look at his starting point.
Yes, good point.
The team he played in that he inherited and still played in. Yeah, he inherited a team that was at the top of the game, at the top of the best in the country, best in Europe. So
I think Everton might argue with that one at a particular time.
Well,
they had just won the league, Everton.
Yeah, I know, but even so, you look at
one of the top two, should we say, at the very least.
If you must,
I'm being fair here. This is the podcast.
Everton leaning tendencies coming out there. I have to see. I think you look at the starting points and what they had to do, and I think people just assumed Kenny would extend that, and he did. I think when Klopp arrived, there was a massive expectation on him to do something, but I don't think anybody probably anticipated, the impact he has had. And had we not been in the era of Manchester City and all their
charges,
trophies,
trophies. Yeah. What do you think will most of more charges or more trophies? I reckon it'll be close come the end.
I'm guilty of. I think that, and also just the overall effect he's had in just changing the atmosphere from what it was.
But
ordinary stuff in the interim between.
Because we obviously have been going down there for years, but different for you, Lewis, obviously, you're new to the Merseyside patch, so it's slightly unfair to me ask that same question because you're a bit younger and you might not really recognise or the impact of previous managers. Well, not that I was alive when Bill Shankly was in charge of a say, I've heard all the stories, but I'll ask a different question then. Where do you think he ranks in terms of just Premier League overall managers?
It's a great question. I think you'd have to go Sir Alex probably first, just for what he won.
That's not a controversial choice. I looked at the reluctance, so you'd have to go.
For me, there's also obviously Pep will have to be in there. Wenger would have to be in there.
Ancelotti, Mourinho. There's quite a few.
Mourinho for what he did at Chelsea, definitely. But whether his legacy gets tarnished from what he did at United and then also...
He won more at United
than any manager since Ferguson has.
And he always says when he finished second that one season, he said it's one of his biggest achievements.
Because
the team is rubbish.
He's in the top five Premier League managers.
Definitely.
I'd probably say fourth.
That's very precise. I appreciate that answer.
Fergie, Pep.
Wenger. Yeah, that's...
Klopp.
What's interesting is that Wenger, a little bit similar to Klopp, is that they both kind of changed the club. Philosophy, that's it. Well, hang on, Liverpool's philosophy has always been one of... I think what Klopp did is that he embraced it, he understood it.
Yeah.
So he understood it straight away, which is why he could get everybody on board. Because when we first started doing his press conferences, we would go to them. He would do a big rallying call. When we used to do the breakout separate section for when we go and speak, rather than when he was in front of the cameras. Sometimes he'd do these rallying cries, and you come out with it and you were like, let's go. Yeah. That obviously changed after about two or three, because he didn't need to do it, because he'd built everybody, got them all on side. And it's quite interesting how he's... The way that he's done it all, the way that he's in front of us, it's probably the same for the players, let's be honest. It's just, he's changed that. And, I don't know. Next question, who's going to replace him?
Well, who? That is the big question.
Because from what you were saying about Dalglish inherited a very good team, whoever takes over, it's not since Dalglish, they are going to be inheriting a very good team.
Yeah,
that's the first time in what, 40 years that's happened to an incoming Liverpool manager.
But the point you made about Klopp was that he arrived and got it straight away, Liverpool right away. And it was just this personality. And in addition to what he does on the coaching field, just his... as a person, as a man, he's just so important. And I don't know where you go to get that. There are good coaches throughout Europe. You can probably pick loads of them. But Liverpool don't necessarily need a good coach. They need somebody more than that, I think.
I was going to say, if you look at when Shankly left and Bob Paisley took over, and I know Bob Paisley had been part of the club for years by that point, but he was a completely different kind of personality to Bill Shankly, and he moved them on to another level. Yeah. So do you not think there could be a case that you mentioned you don't necessarily have to be a good coach, or do you think everything's just changed whereby
the game has changed completely?
Yeah.
I mean, Bill,
you need a front man. You're like a band, aren't you? Yeah. You need a
Bob,
front man.
Bob Paisley would not have survived.
No.
Even
Kenny was struggling a little bit. Yeah.
Because he's just worn down by media. I mean, the media demands on the managers, we only see a fraction of it, really. Yeah. And by the time they've got to us after a game, they've done 14, 15
The TV rights is what helps earn them their big money.
It does, yeah.
That's not a gold flop. That's
what
just
I'm saying
every manager.
You've got to be able to deal with that adequately, more than adequately, as well as what... I say there's a broad spectrum of coaches who are good at coaching, who can do the coaching.
Yeah.
And if you said to them, just go and do the coaching, they would get on fine. And they say, oh, by the way, can you just do 15 interviews after the game, and can you do 4 before the game,
and you can't say the wrong thing in any of
exactly
them.
Can you represent the club in the way we want you to, and bring everyone along with you like Klopp has done, like Shankly did. And there are only certain people who could do that. And, you know, Mourinho, when he first came, you know, he was at Porto, he was at Chelsea, he was that sort of guy. I mean, he's changed massively since then, but he was that sort of, you know, big character. Ferguson was that sort of character. So it's not just about, the technical ability of someone, I don't think is the be all and end all. Obviously it's important, but when you've got a squad that's as good as that, a lot of times you can have your assistant doing the coaching and implement your plans. It's the whole, I don't see the holistic approach, because it's not holistic, you've got to be the club in one person. You have to be the club, and you have to take it on with you.
Lewis, have you ever said the phrase holistic approach on a podcast? Yeah, I'm now inviting you to say it.
I've definitely written it in my words, but there's a lot of words that you write in your copy that you never say out loud.
Are you saying like profligate? Yeah. Like, and by the way, Carl, well done for not answering that question when I asked who do you think is going to take over.
Maybe Carl could be the next manager.
Who is the standout candidate?
Let's turn it round. Say, if you're a manager, why would you not want to go for the job? Yeah. And the answer is because you're following Klopp.
Yeah.
However, why would you want to go for it? It's because you're following Klopp, who's leaving you a really good squad.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So, a club that's very, very stable.
But there's times when you look around Europe and it's obvious whoever the manager everybody wants.
Yeah.
Or there's two or three, you think, right, okay, they're the big names I'm going to go for. And you look at it now, and the big names, bizarrely, are still Carlo Ancelotti, who's never going to come. And when he leaves Madrid, who knows. But then after that, you've got Pep at City. But where you're almost trying to find the next big thing. And I think the next big thing everyone thinks is Alonso.
Yeah,
who's obviously ruled himself out.
Yeah. I've mentioned this on my previous podcast. I'm actually quite pleased that he's done that, because that's going to serve him well going forward for when he then takes over other jobs, because it'll serve them clubs forward, because he's shown that he's not willing to have his head turned straight away by somebody coming with a big offer.
Yeah.
Oh, not that I'm saying anyone's offered it, but there are two or three big jobs that were coming up.
So then you look at the next best candidate, which, you know, should Liverpool go for the next best, but you know, that's the only option we've got, and it's Amorim at Sporting. I mean, you obviously went to Lisbon recently, Lewis.
Well, I was sort of speaking to a few fans outside the ground there, trying to get their verdict on it. And
was this in Italian?
No, I learnt two words of Portuguese as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
but so admittedly through broken English, but they all seemed sure that Klopp was going to Klopp, what am I on about? That Amorim was going to Liverpool, and then there's been a lot of reports in Portuguese newspapers and online websites saying that Amorim is, you know, very close to joining Liverpool. But whenever you speak to sort of sources around Liverpool, they're keen to play it down.
I think it's quite clever. They've never once denied that they're interested in him.
Yeah.
They've never once denied that he's someone who's high on their list, but they're trying to do everything by the book, and they're obviously saying, look, we're looking at all the options, because there's no guarantee that he's going to say yeah.
No, I think interestingly, I think I saw a piece that his numbers match sort of what you'd expect from the Liverpool squad, you know, in terms of he's more of a top star than maybe Alonso was. Alonso was still the standout candidate. So maybe he's got that going for him. I mean, I don't know what he's like off the pitch and what he'll be like with the media.
He's very open in his press conferences, very like almost a bit Mourinho like before he came to England, sort of very front footed with the media. He sort of believes that the match starts in the press conference on the Friday morning or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Get him in.
So that would be very helpful for us to sort of fill our pages if he did come. But I sort of had a worry on behalf of Liverpool. It's just not based on anything other than a worry that maybe they are putting all their eggs in Amorim's basket and sort of they want to dumb it down
Did this lead on to the next question? That's going to say sorry, but if it's not in, then who are the other cats? Let's just pick two or three. Who would you be? Going back to what you were saying about standout, there are people you'd want. If you're Liverpool, you'd go, yeah, I wouldn't mind Ancelotti being in charge, but that's never going to happen. Well, so it's realistic ones.
Well, I think a lot of them you think of and then you can rule them out straight away, because based on something like Julian Nagelsmann, good manager, but he's at Germany, so he'd be focusing on the Euros until late summer, so I don't think that's right at this time. Then Thomas Tuchel sort of failed at Bayern.
He's failed massively in getting him into the semi-finals. Failed at Chelsea by
winning the Champions League. He's getting sacked, basically, isn't he? And then there's Simone Inzaghi at Inter. I've seen his name crop up. He obviously got them into the Champions League final last year and won Serie A this year almost.
But
he doesn't speak a word of English.
And why would he want to leave?
Exactly. Well, so there's a lot like that, and then there's ones just sort of Graham Potter's out of work. I think he sort of tarnished his reputation slightly at Chelsea, but I still think he is a good manager, but again, doesn't really make sense in terms of the personality that Liverpool would want.
Potter would feel like a Brendan appointment, I think. And that obviously that started okay, but it didn't look sustainable.
But then that's where Liverpool were at that moment in time.
So
they have moved, as you mentioned before, they've moved on to something else.
They're on a higher tier of manager, and I just don't know. I mean, obviously, De Zerbi was linked for a long time, but I just didn't. I didn't see him as a Liverpool manager. I just don't think he speaks like a Liverpool manager.
I know a lot of the. It always. Not amuses me, interests me, sorry, is that when other managers like other managers, and De Zerbi's one of those ones that all the other managers go, yeah, really like what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's doing something somewhere that they'd really like to do, but they can't do it at their clubs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, because there's not that pressure that someone like Brighton or. What was it? Salernitana, was it?
Sassuolo,
that's it, yeah.
And Shakhtar.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so he's done that at those kind of places, but
his system is so open at the back that he can get away. Brighton lose 5-0 like three times a season,
yeah,
and they're very good otherwise, or maybe not this season, but he can get away with that there in terms of media criticism. If Brighton lose 5-0 to Everton, but if Liverpool lose 5-0 to Wolves or whatever, then
that's the thing, isn't it?
The papers will be calling for his head.
And also, you know, some recent weeks he's gone all Rafa in talking about his future and owning it. Has to have talks with the owners about this, that, and the other.
In January, he made a little comment, didn't he? When the transfer window closed, he said, well, I wish we could have had some more people in. Maybe even been last year when they were trying to get into the Champions League.
Yeah. And that's never how Klopp has spoken. Klopp has always gone
publicly.
But he always comes out and goes, "Oh well, we've got what we've got, and I'm happy with that." And you know, that's the way it has to be. Whereas I say, De Zerbi's just gone a bit rougher in terms of
So he did Alonso. We did Amorim. We've done De Zerbi. We've done Nagelsmann. Is there anybody else before we finish?
There's a few lesser candidates that could step up, like a Thomas Frank, for example, or
like
Eddie
Howe.
But I don't know if they're big club managers.
Eddie Howe.
Well, that's come out of the. He's good mates of Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes. That's all it is. But I don't think he's a Liverpool manager.
And also, why would he leave?
Newcastle. Unless he gets sacked, which he probably will do. But then again, who did Newcastle get?
Why would you leave Newcastle for Liverpool? Seriously?
No. Why would he leave Newcastle now, the way that he's, the way things are going? In terms of they're going to be getting a load, that, you know, we know the way.
Why would you leave Liverpool?
Yeah.
Why would you leave Newcastle to go to Liverpool?
I'm saying
you're seriously asking that question.
Not me.
No, him. Even him. You're seriously asking that question.
Okay, I'll rephrase it. Why would Liverpool get him in?
Well, that's a different question.
It is. That's why I've rephrased it into a completely different question.
Therefore, proving my point.
Yeah.
I know
what you're saying, by the way. Yeah.
We sort of spoke about this before. I think we've spoken about this before, but the fact all the backroom staff are going as well.
The main ones.
Yeah. Pep and Peter Kravitz are going, and you think. We've gone back to this thing about who wants to be the man who succeeds Klopp. No one really wants that. You almost think, well, do you not give it to ask Pep to do it, but see how he gets on?
He's going somewhere else, though, isn't he? And he doesn't want it either.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, we talk about Paisley inheriting it from Shankly and Dalglish, and you think, well, if there isn't an outstanding candidate out there. That we can see. I mean, maybe Mike Edwards sees something. Obviously, sees something. Sees things that we don't see.
Yeah.
Two seasons of continuity at least buys you a bit of time for the next person who might be top of the list. But is that too much of a gamble? I mean, as you say, he doesn't appear to want it, but. He wants to strike on his own as manager, but probably he wants to try somewhere else before Liverpool.
Any other names then?
Not really. But there's Thiago Motta at Bologna. He's getting them into the Champions League, but he doesn't speak English, and I don't think he's ready for a big club yet, probably. So I just think Amorim's the one that makes sense to me in terms of his profile, a young manager that he can grow as well at Liverpool. And, obviously, he's overachiever of Sporting. They'd only won two titles in four decades before he came, and now they're going to win the second in 4 years in the Portuguese Cup final as well. It's a big step up from Portugal to the Premier League in England, but I think it's a risk worth taking. It might just take a bit of time if he did come to change the system however he wants it and stuff, but I think he's the one that ticks the most boxes. I don't think he ticks all the boxes by any means, but compared to all the rest around you, I think he ticks the most.
Right, I think that should do us. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me here. I know we sometimes get complaints about the sound quality, but today I'm literally recording this off my phone in a cafe by a road, and halfway through it's just started absolutely belting it down. So if they want to catch you on social media, Lewis, can they? Or are you going to tell them to go away? I won't ask this question to Carl because he doesn't want people anywhere near him.
that's just generally in line. That's the attitude I have to people. Yeah, I'm standoffish.
It's at @LewisSteele_ on Twitter or X, whatever it's called this week.
Are you on Instagram?
I am.
In a professional capacity.
Lewis Steele DM, which Daily Mail.
Which
DM.
Makes it sound as though you want inviting everybody to privately message you. Which you do not want to slide into those. Right, that'll do us. Join us soon for another Blood Red podcast. Cheerio.